Thank you. As was mentioned, my name is Russ Bull, and my presentation today will be on the effects of electrofishing on fish health and survival, although I'm going to admit right up front that there's little on fish health simply for time constraint reasons. So I stuck with mainly with effects on fish survival, but a lot of the same principles will apply, the same trends that I'll point out during the presentation. Just as an outline about where we're going, first I'm going to talk about, just give some background information on electrofishing so that we're all on the same page. And then I'm going to talk about the implications that any observed effects on fish survival would have for populations, as well as for populations of endangered fish. And then after that, I'm going to go over the results that have actually been found in studies that have been completed to date for all the life history stages that have been studied, which are embryos, and I should have included larvae and juveniles in there, and adult fish. And then I'll talk about some future research needs, of which there are many, because this type of research seems to generate more questions than answers in my experience going over it here. So the first thing I want to talk about is just start from ground zero and mention that electrofishing is the use of waterborne electric fields to capture fish. It's an effective capture technique, and it's able to be used in most freshwater habitats. And this makes it, some fisheries biologists consider it an essential technique because it is an efficient technique. And oftentimes they think of the effects that it could have on fish survival simply as sort of the cost of doing business. And it's true that we do get very good information from the technique, and we're able to monitor populations and manage populations much better using this technique. And so, but there has been a lot of research done to find out what are the effects on populations and what are the effects on fish, so that we can get at this question a little bit better. Just to go over, there's boat electroshockers, backpack electroshockers. Most of you are probably familiar with both of those. The only reason to mention that when talking about these kinds of studies is that boat electroshockers tend to generate a larger electric field. And I'm not saying larger in intensity, but larger in size. So more fish will be exposed to the higher intensities of electric field, possibly with boat electroshockers. You can control the voltage. That's really the control for electric field intensity that the operator has. And you can choose a waveform or electric current type. Alternating current, direct current, and pulse direct current are the main ones that are used. Most others are just variations on these. And so this is just an illustration to show what those look like in case anyone's not familiar with time on the x-axis for all these graphs and voltage on the y-axis. You can see that AC produces this oscillating sine wave that goes through the origin. And it's just sort of a representation of the current switching directions. DC is much more straightforward. It's just a constant voltage applied over that time period. And pulse DC is just a pulsed version of the DC, where the current is shut off repeatedly for a certain amount of time and then back on. And that'll come into play later when I go over differences in mortality between those types that are caused on the different life history stages. Conductivity, water conductivity is the most important, far and away the most important environmental factor that impacts the electric field intensity of these waterborne electric fields. Conductivity, in case anyone's not familiar, is just the ability of the water to conduct the electricity. And so it's basically a measure of sort of how many ions are in the water, because that's what allows the water to conduct electricity. And conductivity, as well as the waveform and the target species, are all things that can go into choosing a voltage when you're out in the field, which again, as I said, is your electric field intensity. That's how you can change the electric field intensity. So just as an example of that, in the Great Smoky Mountain National Park, when you go and electroshock for brook trout, in many places the conductivity is extremely low. 20 microsiemens per centimeter is an extremely low conductivity. And so you would need to choose a high voltage. 600 to 700 volts is quite high. And AC is often used, whereas in many other places, it's not used because it's seen as a more harmful waveform to the fish, but it also elicits the best response in order to be able to capture the fish. And so oftentimes, this is used in the park for electrofishing. So that's just an example of how one might go about choosing the electric field. And any implications on populations is what we're going to discuss right now, if there are lethal effects of electrofishing on fish. In 1998, McMichael et al. Put out a study that showed that the frequency of injury due to electroshock decreases with increasing spatial scale. As you go from the sample scale, that you can think of is that's effectively what you're electroshocking in the stream. And then as you move up in spatial scale, the effects are going to decrease as far as frequency is concerned. And so the take-home message is sort of just that there's an insignificant proportion of the population that's going to be impacted when you view it at the stream scale. This is just a sort of basic representation of that, thanks to my art skills in PowerPoint, where you can see this is represented as the stream scale, and then the reach scale, and then the sample scale, the reach scale, and then the stream scale goes sort of off the screen with those big arrows, and you can see that you're gonna shock these fish here, and only a certain proportion of them are going to be affected. So even if it's a significant proportion, well then you have all these fish that are outside of your sample scale that will not be as impacted. They will not be impacted at all. And so there's not much implications for populations necessarily. But then when you think about a situation where you have threatened and endangered fish in the stream, loss of even one individual can be considered unacceptable and considered as take under the Endangered Species Act, according to Nielsen in 1998. And another way of thinking about it is if there's a small isolated population of fish, which threatened and endangered fish often are in a small isolated setting, then you could be exposing a large number of the population to the electric field. And if there is significant mortality or injury elicited by that electric field, then you could have an effect on the population. And just sort of going further into this, if you think about it during spawning season, there's multiple life history stages of fish that can be exposed to the electric fields because you have, you know, the adults that are spawning, you have embryos that are still in the stream that are not targets of electrofishing, but they're going to be there and they're going to get the electroshock anyway, as well as you're also going to have some larvae and juveniles that'll be there. And fish that aggregate to spawn, which several species do, would be particularly susceptible because a lot of the fish would be in the same area and could be hit with the electric field. And so potential population level effects could exist if the electric field does happen to be lethal to the fish. And so I'm going to look at some electrofishing effects on survival for embryos, juveniles, and adults, and see if this is worth worrying about. There's some conclusions that can be made and will extend to all the different life history stages, such as that, and none of these are groundbreaking, but mortality increases with electric field intensity. That's pretty straightforward, as well as there are differences in susceptibility between species. Now, the reasons for that are unknown, but it makes sense that there would be differences between species. This is just a graph illustrating the things that I just mentioned there, and I should point out that the graphs that I'm presenting today are not my research or somebody else's research. They're sort of a representation of what's been found by the research in my reading on the topic. So I've just made these up as visual illustrations of what could happen. And that's why I have no values here on the x-axis whatsoever. And so you can see as electric field intensity increases for species A, B, and C, all of them, their survival is going to decrease. And as well, you can see that there are differences. For example, in order to get the survival of species A down to 50%, you only need an electric field intensity that's there. But to get it for species B, it's going to need to be higher. And species C, it's going to need to be even higher. And I'm not saying that you would want to get that down there, but you can see there are differences in the susceptibility between species. And that's been shown in the research that I'm presenting here. There are some specific effects to the different life history stages. And now I'm going to go over some of the effects that we see on embryonic survival. Certain developmental stages are more susceptible than others, and on the next slide I'm going to sort of illustrate that and talk about which ones are susceptible and which ones are not. DC has been shown to be more lethal than pulse DC. This is another thing that is not known why that is the case, but it is significant because it's not the same thing that we see with adults. And so choosing an electric current type is not always so straightforward because you could be affecting adults and you could be affecting embryos differently with the different waveforms. As well as embryos shocked at later developmental stages can hatch prematurely. And this doesn't have necessarily direct survival impacts, but it could have some ecological implications because that's more time for the small larvae to be in the stream, possibly being preyed on. And so this is just another illustration that I've come up with to show you that certain developmental stages of embryos are more susceptible than others to electroshock-induced mortality. And I'm going to describe just a little bit what each of these stages is. Pre-epiphyse is just before epiphyse, so once I define epiphyse, you'll have an understanding of what that is. And this picture up here of this embryo is a zebrafish embryo, and it's going through epiphyllae. And epiphyllae is, if you think about an embryo, it has a blastula, which is sort of the ball of cells that sits on top of the yolk sac. You can see the yolk sac is the large portion down here. And the blastula sits on top of the yolk sac. And then when that blastula begins to spread over the yolk sac, that's what we call epiphyllae. And so this embryo is beginning to undergo epiphyllae, and that's at a particularly susceptible stage. And this graph is slightly misleading because epiphyllae doesn't happen halfway into development like it looks like it does here. It happens more skewed towards early development. Embryos that are earlier are usually more susceptible, except when you get way down to the very beginning of development, they're not as susceptible as when they're at epiphyllae. And then by the time they reach the eyed stage, which is really just when you can see the eyes through the outer chorion of the embryo, they're really not very susceptible to electroshock, not nearly as they are at that epiphyllae stage. Also, this is another graph illustrating that direct current is more lethal than pulse direct current. You can see, again, electric field intensity on the x-axis and percent survival here on the y-axis. And it just illustrates the difference between pulse DC and DC. So now moving on to effective electrophishing on larvae and juveniles. I think it would probably be good to define larvae and juveniles when you're talking about fish. In this particular study, they defined the larvae as the newly hatched embryo that still is eating from the yolk sac that we were just talking about. And so that would be a newly hatched, that would be a larvae, and a juvenile would be a fish that has absorbed that yolk sac and is beginning to undergo a lot of physiological changes that will eventually make it more into like a fish that you might catch or something like that. And these investigations have really only been done with pulsed direct current. It's hard to say what would happen with alternating current or direct current. So these newly transformed juveniles then are juveniles that are undergoing that change from larvae to juvenile, where they've absorbed the yolk sac and there's a lot of different physiological changes going on, and they appear to be most susceptible at that stage. And this is just illustrating that again. You can see here in the middle is the newly transformed juvenile, and they're most susceptible to the electroshock. For adults, as I mentioned before, alternating current is more lethal than pulse DC or DC. I should mention that for adults, a lot of these older studies that have been done have used somewhat unrealistic electric fields that are either for much longer durations or much higher intensities than would normally be experienced in the field. But it has been shown that AC is more lethal than pulse DC or DC. And there's another point that people often like to make, and you'll notice I have no citations for it, and that's because it's unsubstantiated in the literature. People make observations for things that they see in the field, but it's not substantiated in the literature that larger fish are more vulnerable to electroshock-induced mortality. And the reasoning that this is thought is that greater size equals more responsive to electroshock, and that's just a field observation, equals more injury, because the more responsive they are to electroshock means the more muscle contractions they're going to be undergoing, and the more intense muscle contractions, which can cause vertebral injury. Then making this jump to more mortality is kind of difficult, though, because in this Taylor et al. Study in 1957, they also showed that direct current could cause some mortality, and it did not cause the same muscle contractions that pulse DC or AC caused. And so making the jump from that greater size equals more mortality is very difficult to do in the literature. It's not nearly substantiated. And we heard just a few weeks ago, Aaron Scheiding was talking about how they could not use electroshocking to collect minnows for her study because too many of them would die due to the exposure. And so this is something that needs some hashing up, but we'll get to that later. So this is just an illustration of that. AC can cause lower survival than pulse DC, than DC for adults. All right, now I'm going to talk about some future research needs. And as I mentioned before, a lot of times this research tends to generate more questions than answers. So certainly there are probably more than I have listed here that would be very good questions to answer and could use some answering. So again, investigating the impact of size on injury and mortality. It needs to be done in the literature. There's a lot of speculation on it out there, and something needs to be done to address this issue, as well as examining why embryos are susceptible to DC while adults are more vulnerable to AC and pulse DC. This is an interesting finding that is not not much is known about it. AC has not been used to shock embryos very much, and if it was, it's very difficult to compare with DC and pulsed DC just because of the electric field characteristics. You'd have to do some sort of experiment with adult fish to determine that say AC is parallel with pulsed DC in its capture efficiency, and in that way compare those two electric fields, use those same electric fields to shock embryos. And so it's very difficult to compare those two. It would also be nice to find the most harmful waveform to larvae and juveniles. Some electroshocking has been done with them, and as I mentioned, the newly transformed juveniles seem to be more susceptible than other stages of juveniles. But again, not much has been done with AC or DC on those fish. It might give us some information more into what's going on with that second question that I mentioned as far as differences between adults and embryos. Another thing that should be done is in one study comparing AC and DC and pulsed DC. Only one study has been done doing that, and it was one of those ones that was using unrealistic electric fields intensities. And so a study covering that would be a very, very helpful addition to the literature. I have some references here. If you'll notice on the fourth page or on the last page of that handout that you have, in case anybody is much more interested in the impacts on fish health, because I didn't have time to go over it, I included several references that go into the physiological and behavioral impacts of electrofishing on fish, in case you are interested. And with that, I'll take any questions, comments. Yes. There has. That was just another thing that I didn't get time to mention. I left it out of the presentation. What's that?
Can you summarize it?
Well, a lot of times increasing the frequency of pulse DC is going to increase the mortality, I believe, is the overall conclusion they get from that. So, sorry to repeat that question. The question was, has there been much done with frequency of pulse direct current on and how changing the frequency would impact fish mortality, is that right? And the answer is that there has been research done on it, and it seems to be that with the common electric fields that are used in the field, increasing that frequency is going to increase injury and mortality. Other questions? Yes?
You mentioned that larger fish may be more sensitive to certain ones. I guess my question is, does that also mean that larger fish are more likely to be captured? And if so, do you sort of adjust to that and what you're actually sampling? Are all fish of all sizes equally captured?
Well, that's a good question. So the question is the differences in addressing the differences in size between the fish and not just with their survival but with their catchability. And certainly I think there's probably more research that needs to be done on that as well. I can't answer that definitively on what's been done. Yes. Mm-hmm. If that would play out in a study that be carried out. Yes. The question was, is there consensus in the studies for things as far as different forms impacting adults and embryos differently? And as far as that goes, as far as I've seen, it has been pretty well shown. I didn't list all the studies that have showed those things. But AC is more harmful to larger or adult fish, whereas DC is more harmful to embryos. And there hasn't been that much done with embryos, so there's just the few studies that have been done have shown that, though.